did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight, and by Spotlight Branding, helping to build your internet foundation. I use Daylight as my case management tool. It organizes all my cases, clients, my calendar, to-dos, and emails all in one app that's with me on my Mac, iPhone, and iPad. I use Daylight on my own, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases, delegate tasks to each other, and see everyone's schedule, all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools I use to stay organized and increase efficiency. Visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight for free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 53 of The Law Entrepreneur. Guess what? I'm Neil Tyra, your host as always. Today, I have a very interesting guest, Ms. Catherine Sanders Reach. Catherine is the Director of Law Practice Management and Technology for the Chicago Bar Association. She was previously the director at the American Bar Association's Legal Technology Resource Center, providing practice technology assistance to lawyers for over 10 years. Prior to her work at the Chicago Bar and the American Bar Association, she worked in library and information sciences for a number of years, and she received her master's degree in library and information studies from the University of Alabama. Roll Tide. So we're going to chat a lot about what I think are cutting edge programs that Catherine is introduced in the Chicago Bar, and nuances of technology demonstrations that I think bar associations and larger law firms, frankly, would be well advised to spend some time developing the same way that Catherine has for her bar association. It's a really interesting discussion about the intersection between law schools, bar associations, and law firms. And I can think of no better person to address that topic than Catherine Reach. Here she is. Catherine Sanders Reach, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you.
I'm delighted to have you with us. As our listeners have already heard, Catherine is the director of the Law Practice Management and Technology Group of the Chicago Bar Association. Tell me your journey. How did you get from way back when to this lofted position with the Bar Association?
It's been an interesting journey. I won't start you at the very beginning, but in the late 90s, I went to library school. And at the time, technology was taking over. So we learned how to code. We learned how to do websites. We learned how to network computers. And then I went into a law firm here in Chicago, and I was migrating a print catalog to a digital catalog. And this was when Lexis.com and Westlaw.com had just come out. You went off the dedicated terminals to a web-based browser system. So lots of exciting things going on, but a lot of change. And so a job came up at the ABA that was in the Legal Technology Resource Center, and they were looking for either a JD or an MLS, which is the library science degree. And so I applied and got the position there and worked there, going from a research specialist to fairly quickly the director because of some staff changes, and was there for 11 years, basically helping lawyers manage change and understanding how to use technology in their practice, which really kind of refocuses on managing your practice at all and looking at the business aspects of your practice, and worked a lot with the law practice division there at the ABA and all the wonderful people there. So about 5 years ago, I had the opportunity to move to the Chicago Bar and start a department from scratch that focused on law practice management technology. So I came over here. I have to admit, I joined the ABA as soon as I quit because I would miss all my people. And then have obviously enjoyed the lawyers in Chicago and the Chicago Bar Association. I got involved in our Justice Entrepreneurs Incubator Project immediately upon starting here. So that's been a very exciting project. And so that's basically what got me here.
So primarily your clientele, I mean, obviously is Chicago based lawyers. Would you say it skews more towards the solo and small firms, or is it evenly spread across the, you know, the spectrum of practice sizes?
It is absolutely solos and small firms, and anybody who's in a bar association will tell you that that's our primary audience. Those are the people who look to the bar for substantive help, because they don't have as many resources as a larger firm that has, you know, whole teams of people helping with different aspects of the business. And so that's a need that can be filled by the Bar Association for our solo and small firm members.
One of the things I think I've noticed in interviewing folks around the country in this regard is that a lot of solos don't take advantage of the resources they have in their bar association. And so one of the real challenges, I think, for groups, organizations like yourself, is to get the word out to those practitioners that you have a resource or a set of resources and tools that would help them.
Yeah, there's a number of challenges we face with messaging. It's that difficulty of getting the message to people when they need the information, because otherwise they forget it. They may see it, we may get it in front of them a million times, but until it is a need, it isn't relevant, and they forget. So kind of the just-in-time information delivery is difficult to gauge, but repetition is our only hope, is to keep the flow going. The other thing that we're seeing is we're dealing with three active generations right now in law. You've got the new millennials graduating law school and opening on their own practices or joining small practices. You've got the Gen X, and you've got the baby boomers who are closing in retirement but not retiring and still running their practices. So everybody has different learning methods. So getting your content into multiple formats, getting those, you know, the tiny bite-sized hunks to the 45-page white papers and everything in between.
That's a fascinating insight that you are addressing three different generations who each consume and learn information differently. That must be quite a challenge.
As long as I think you're cognizant of that's what you're dealing with, it becomes a little less of a challenge, because I have this concept of, from a delivering information perspective, macro to micro and micro to macro. So if I do a series of short videos on using Microsoft Word, then I'll pull those all together as a larger, longer program, and then build out maybe a tutorial white paper that walks you through with the screenshots and everything. So we can break it up and down, or if I do a really, you know, a long CLE, then I'll start pulling pieces out of that to get more discrete and more detailed and deliver in a variety of formats. So it's actually just kind of reworking a lot of things.
But it's having a cognizance that your audience is striated and that you need to make sure that your products, you know, line up with each of those types of audiences.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about the services that you offer. What kinds of things does the Law Practice Management and Technology Group make available to lawyers in your area?
So we do your traditional CLE. Our CLE programs are typically about an hour and a half. Longer than that, I think we lose people. Shorter than that, we really don't get to say much. So that seems about the right amount of time. And we do those once or twice a month through the auspices of the CLE department at the Chicago Bar. I also do a lot of speaking for other bar associations and other entities. So because I was on a national level before, I still do a lot of outreach through other organizations to speak to their lawyers. It just makes me a better presenter and more knowledgeable and keep on top of things. So I love doing it. And now everybody's doing webinars, so I don't have to fly as much anymore. So the regular CLEs, and then we too have another series of programs that we call how-to programs. They typically are more 30 minutes to an hour. And they are much more focused on solving a specific problem. So, for instance, next week, based on one of our members' questions to me, which is, why would I pay for a practice management product when I could probably get away with just using the Google Suite? I'm actually doing a comparison between Google Suite, Office 365, and one of the practice management SaaS products, where we're walking through a real estate closing, just to give people a very concrete sense of the differences in the products and why you would pay more for one versus the other. We do, you know, how to use styles in Word. We do what are the pros and cons of cyber liability insurance. We do, you know, programs on 401ks for your staff. All sorts of different topics, but all related to the business of law or using technology to be more efficient in your practice. A lot of security topics too, like how do you encrypt a file before you send it to a web-based storage facility?
I thought that when I looked at the website and looked at all these, the how-to videos that you've done, I thought it was really very interesting. And I mentioned to you on our pre-call conversation that I think it's cutting edge in the sense that perhaps not necessarily are the topics themselves cutting edge, but the presentation of those topics using video on your part, it puts you light years ahead of a lot of other, you know, bar associations and training entities. So for whatever it's worth, I compliment you on that. And are you getting good feedback from your users as to the use of video as a training mechanism?
Yeah, you know, the way we deliver it, they can come in. So we have people in a room and a live version, unless we have a guest speaker that we remote in. We also webcast the videos. I think that's probably our biggest footprint is the live webcast of the programs, which we share our screens using join.me so they can see what's going on. We use Camtasia to record those and then make them available in the video library. So whether you're the kind of person who wants to come into the room and ask questions, or you want to do it live online, or you want to do it live online and then watch the video to refresh your memory about something, or you just want to watch it on demand, we try to make all of those options available. And again, it's no more extra work for me to deliver it that way than, you know, to do anything else. So it's one effort on my part. We do have some shorter YouTube video series on the Chicago Bar channel. So I'll do, you know, short little things that are just kind of more tip oriented.
Well, again, I'm going to compliment you on that. I think you sell yourself a little short in terms of how unique that is. Because as I go around and interview a lot of folks for this podcast and have had the opportunity to review a lot of other bar association websites, I'd say you're probably in the 5% range of folks that are doing it the way you are. And it's interesting because there's a lot of folks who will do the standard CLE, in the Bar Association headquarters building, but it's not recorded, it's not taped, it's not made available via webinar. And as you said, you're dealing with multiple generations of attorneys who want to have that resource available to them online in many cases. And it's no more work. It astounds me that more people aren't following your lead.
Well, I have to admit, I was sirened over here to the Chicago Bar for a reason. One, they're very quick to adopt and change if you can make a good argument for it. The other thing, they were already set up to do the webinars, and it was a little bit of tweaking on my part to kind of expand and extend what they were already doing. So I came into a place that was ready to change and had a good platform to start building on. So I'm pretty fortunate. One of the other things that we do here that's kind of puts us in a more unique setting than other bar associations, and I think primarily because we're a metro bar, so our members are, while they're all over the place, they do have access to come to the bar center a little bit more than, say, a state bar. We have a training center, so we can actually have hands-on training, and because of the generosity of some of the vendor sponsors, we have loaner laptops with software installed, and we can do, Microsoft Office training, the Nuance product training, Acrobat training, a lot of software as a service, the web-based products. We do social media, like how-tos. One 3.5-hour training session we do is we invite lawyers to come in, buy a domain name, and build a 5-page website. So for the attorneys who've never had a web presence, or they had one and then never updated it and are sort of intimidated or just haven't carved out the time to figure it out, we actually walk them through that. And that's been that's been a fun class to do. It's really gratifying to see that they start embracing what's been made really simple at this point in terms of the tools that are available, and that they get to affect change and get empowered, and that gets them interested in doing other things.
Well, I really do think this is it's something that's sorely needed. And you, again, I don't want to sound like I'm fawning all over you, but I think you're to be commended because you're doing a couple of things that are really, I think, unique. I mean, one you just mentioned about affording attorneys the opportunity to come in and helping them build a 5-page website. And just that process alone is very valuable for anybody considering a solo practice. A couple of other things I noticed from your website was that, as you mentioned about social media, I believe you also have a how-to, and I'm assuming that you invite attorneys in to flesh out their LinkedIn profiles and kind of get up to speed on that platform.
Absolutely. So we do a lot of the videos on different aspects, like using LinkedIn for career advancement and different topics like that. So we'll get fairly granular in what your purpose for using LinkedIn is. We like to start with a goal in mind. And then we also do the hands-on programs where we'll walk people through updating their LinkedIn profile, creating their LinkedIn profile. We also do individual LinkedIn profile reviews as a periodic service. So we'll actually schedule 20 to 30 minute sessions with attorneys to talk to them about what are they trying to get out of it, what's the purpose for being there, and how they can improve their profile in order to do that.
I think that's invaluable.
No, and it's great, and we try to focus, like we just did a series of LinkedIn profile reviews and headshots last month during a young lawyer's focused day-long program event, and sometimes we invite young lawyers, but that's not who we get. Of course, we're happy for anybody to come, but we try to, target that market. This time I was very, very happy that we had a lot of new lawyers come in. And so it was fun to work with them to figure out, how to improve their social media profile to reach their next goals. Most of them were employed, but they were looking for that next step.
Sure.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. As I mentioned, I use Daylight as my case management tool, as it organizes all my cases, clients, my calendar, to-dos, emails, all in one app. And it's with me everywhere because it's on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. If I get a call from a client when I'm out of the office, I can quickly pull up the details of the case on my iPhone and then jot down some notes after the call, and it's all organized in Daylight. I use Daylight by myself on my own, but you can also use it in a team. You can track the status of cases, delegate tasks between one another, and check everyone's calendars, all without having to interrupt anyone or dig through papers. It really streams your workflow so you can work more efficiently. Managing email is a big part of how Daylight helps me. It integrates with Apple Mail, so as I'm going through my emails, I can just click and save emails to a client or to a case. That way, when I'm looking at the case details, I can see a history of all the emails with the client or any notes that I've taken and follow-ups with them all in one spot. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight. to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. In addition, I want to tell you about my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They build a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. And this helps me generate more referrals and more business for my firm. Their services are designed to help lawyers get better results out of the resources they're already investing into marketing and business development. They create an internet foundation that makes all of your marketing work better. That's because these days, almost every potential client is going to check out your web presence before they hire you. It's important that you create a strong first impression. And that's what Spotlight Branding has done for me, and they can do it for you too. So visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for our podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE. The other thing that you mentioned briefly, and I want to kind of drill down a bit on, as an example, indicated that you do some how-tos and some detailed training on different applications, such as Microsoft Word or Acrobat. Now, I'm a techie from way back. I was a techie before I became an attorney. And it's always astounded me that attorneys as a class aren't really getting the value out of the applications they have on their computers, particularly Microsoft Word and Acrobat, that they could, knowing how to do things like generate a table of contents automatically or apply style sheets or use footnotes or citations and do bait stamping in Acrobat and highlighting and annotating PDFs. Those are all resources and tools that attorneys have available to them because they have those applications, but they're not maximizing their use, and therefore they're making their lives a little more difficult. You seem to have found that, or at least partial solution, is to help train the attorneys on how to use those resources that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, one of the big challenges in teaching lawyers, in addition to the generational aspects, is also sole practitioners think of themselves differently and their needs differently than even a firm with 2 to 5 attorneys with a couple of support staff. That also practice areas will change behaviors and needs dramatically. So when you're kind of coming up with these class structures, it's actually easier to dig down to meet the needs of a lot of people to talk about how styles, work in Word, because it doesn't matter what your practice area is or your practice setting. That's going to be a good, useful bit of information to you. So sometimes actually getting to that more granular level makes the classes, I think, more valuable to the individual lawyers.
Without question, yeah.
Uh-huh. We do have some programs where we focus on a particular practice area because we realize that it's more valuable for them than most in other practice settings, especially litigation specific stuff, litigation support, e-discovery. Although we do try to recognize that there's some of that information would be really great if smaller firm attorneys would embrace some of it, or family law attorneys with the e-discovery, things like that. So I think the biggest challenge we have is writing descriptions that accurately portray what we're trying to do and are enticing enough to get people to participate.
Well, what I like is that you're, as you said, you're at the granular level. And so often practice management or technology entities within the bar associations, the deepest they go is, you know, 10 apps you should have on your iPhone, or, you know, how to integrate Microsoft Outlook into your practice. They don't really get down to that nitty-gritty that I think really has a dramatic effect on the productivity and leveraging the tools that attorneys have. And you seem to be hitting that, quite heavily. I think that's fabulous.
Well, for the bar association, I mean, you have to have somebody who has that expertise. And Nora and I have to learn all this stuff ourselves. So I probably spend as much time training lawyers as teaching myself how to do things. And that's not a skill set that you probably find in everybody. I'll put down in our schedule that I'm going to teach a product that I've never even used, and I've got 2 months to learn it.
Necessity is the mother of invention there.
Yeah.
I venture to say you probably have an attorney within your association that does know that. And so sometimes it's a matter of finding that individual and leveraging their expertise.
Nora was a paralegal and worked in several law firms, and I worked in a law firm. And then, I can definitely ask people, but a lot of this stuff you know that they don't know how to use, that they need to be able to use file with the courts through e-filing. So we need to teach them redaction. And, you know, I'll do a program on 3 different ways to redact based on free or low cost products or products you already have. So, you know, we do things like that. We've recognized that there's so many Mac users that we're going to do separate classes for the Mac users, because it's really hard to put the Windows and the Mac users for Office in the same room.
Hatfield and McCoys.
Well, it's not so much that, it's that the way that Office functions in Mac is different than the way it functions in Windows. And so trying to teach the two at once gets a little tricky. So the good thing is between the two of us, we have plenty of devices to test things on. We also do hands-on smartphones, so they can bring in their iPhones and we'll show them how to set up security, how to set up something like Signal for secure messaging, you know, tips and tricks and settings that they need to use. So we do that for iPhones and Androids.
I think that's brilliant. Let's go up a level here, a little higher in the atmosphere, and take a more global view of this thing. Whose role, in your opinion, is it to provide training to prospective solo or new attorneys on the business of running a law firm? Is it a shared responsibility, or is there one entity that, in your opinion, that should take the lead, or what's your views on that?
Well, I guess the law school's perspective has, up to this point, I think, been mostly we're training them to practice law. And there's also been this for a long time. The lawyers would go into bigger firms. They didn't really, I think the law schools didn't often focus on people going into sole practice. The other thing is now I think there's an assumption that most of the students are fairly tech savvy and don't necessarily need the training. And I think the attorneys themselves may not think they need the training. But the reality is, a lot of times, I think people who came from a humanities background and go into law school and then go into a law firm where the support staff, is down to like a 6-to-1 ratio, you're not going to have somebody helping you do some stuff that's standard technology use in a law practice, but is brand new to most users for that. So who's responsible for teaching that? Well, if you're going into a firm, hopefully the firms are helping out. And I do see firms are hiring more trainers. But if you're going into a sole practice, you may be doing it the slowest, most tedious way possible because you don't know how to teach yourself the skill set, or you go and find a YouTube video or another lawyer shows you. But I do think the bars have an opportunity to step up and kind of meet this need that may not have been quite as acute as before.
Yeah, I think it's a tremendous opportunity for the bar associations because I agree with you totally. It's not something that's necessarily being covered in the law schools. Although we are seeing, and guests have been on this show who've indicated that more and more, some of the law schools are adding, say, a course for the third year attorneys that would address the basics of opening a practice, which I think is only responsible on their part because so many of their graduates, particularly during the downturn in the legal market, so many of their graduates, the only opportunity they were going to have to practice law was to open their own practice. So I applaud the schools that are doing that. So I agree with you. I think the bar associations have a significant role, and I'm glad to see that that's happening. Do you work with other associations in and around the area, or you work with the ABA, kind of coordinate and learn and share your lessons?
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, I do a lot of speaking for other bar associations, and we actually will syndicate our videos to other bar associations if they want them, if they don't have somebody on their team or the staff or resources to generate that kind of content. We do have a way to share those with them. I do a lot of work with the ABA Law Practice Division, but I also still do stuff with their young lawyers, the GP Solo. Actually, I'm got an article due for them right now. And then other entities, the government public lawyers section. So do a lot with the ABA, do a lot with other bar associations. Also do things with other legal organizations like the National Association for Bar Counsel. Do as much as we can with law schools. I actually was just guest lecturing at Northwestern for their legal technology course, which is in its second year yesterday. Next week, Loyola is having, they just started their legal technology course this semester. So go over there to help them. And there's also the law practice management courses, but I'm fascinated that these two schools are doing strictly legal technology courses. And the professors who are running those two programs are from a, I guess their curriculum perspective are similar in some ways and really different in others. And I think it's the needs of their particular students. I know that the Loyola class has adopted the legal tech audit that Casey Flaherty had developed and is now selling through Procertus. And then I got a little whiff of the fact that the Northwestern students were actually learning how to code.
Interesting. Well, kind of wrapping up here, what role do you see, you know, private entities playing in this space? I'm thinking of folks that are offering seminars and workshops and training classes on a pay for profit basis. Supposing that there's a role for that market.
I don't think you can get this information out enough or in enough places. And there are people who don't have time or the inclination to join a bar if they're not required to. And so if there's a series of programs that are available through a for-profit entity that meet their needs and are high quality, then that's great. I guess my one small concern about the private entities, if they're not specifically focused on legal, and even sometimes if they are, just the lawyers need to keep in mind, no matter who you're actually getting this stuff from, that their ethical requirements may or may not be as well understood. And so that doesn't excuse them from not knowing. So if you go work with a entity that helps you put together a website, and your website has a bunch of testimonials with no disclaimer because they didn't know that under your rules you're required to. That doesn't excuse you.
Exactly. Well, let me leave you with just one suggestion here, and it's free, so take it for what it's worth. One of the things I've been struggling with as of late as a solo practitioner is getting a grip on my accounting. A counterpart of yours here in the Maryland Bar Association said that the most important staff member that a law firm could hire would be a bookkeeper. And so with that, the bookkeeper and I have been going over how to set up Quicken to use in a law firm to get the maximum amount of out of it. I think that would be, particularly since if you screw that up, it's the quickest way to become an ex-lawyer. I think that's an opportunity that more and more associations might want to take a look at.
Agreed. I think QuickBooks, although we do have a lot of products on the market that are trying to pull in not just the time and billing and trust accounting management, but now some of the back office accounting in terms of payroll and taxes and other things into the products. So kind of first getting a handle on who's doing what and then what's common. If you hire an accountant, they're going to be familiar with QuickBooks. It's a given. The ABA has a great starter. It's called QuickBooks in 1 Hour for Lawyers. So I'll plug that ABA book.
Okay, we'll put that on our notes too.
But yeah, absolutely. It's not something that lawyers come in knowing, and it's intimidating and scary.
So. Yeah. And if you are doing, say, hourly cases with a retainer and, you know, how do you manage all that? It's a little easier if you're doing fixed, you know, fee and or contingency-based cases. But there's all different kinds of setups. And it's been fascinating for me as I go through this. And I think it's a resource or an area that deserves a little more attention. And so since you're on that cutting edge, as I see it, I think you'd be a perfect person to address that need.
Well, thanks for the suggestion,
Catherine. I want to thank you ever so much for taking the time to be with us today on the Law Entrepreneur, and tell our listeners how they might go about getting in touch with you if they want to follow up and ask further questions or reach out to you.
Well, if you Google my name, Catherine with a C, Sanders Reach, you find me in a variety of ways, but I'm on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/in/Catherine Reach or at Twitter at Catherine Reach. My website is lpmt.chicagobar.org. There's a contact us page there. So, and I'm more than happy to answer questions. Because I have a library background and a library heart. So I just like to answer questions.
Perfect. Well, you've been a delight to have with us today. And I want to thank you again and wish you all the best as you move forward.
Great. Thanks so much, Neil.
Thank you. Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through the Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.